freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The B government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of media?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
My name is S.M. Gibson. This is Anti-Media Radio. It is November the 22nd, 2016, 53 years ago to the day that John Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas. But unfortunately, there are much more pressing things going on in the world today. I was hoping we could talk about the Kennedy assassination a little bit tonight, but there's just so much going on. I don't know if we're going to have time to get to it. 2016 has been an absolutely crazy year. I think this is the year that corporate media has finally been exposed to a great degree that we've been lied to since 1963 and before. We've been lied to for a long time about a lot of very major issues. Steve, people are still have convinced themselves with their stubbornness, their pseudo-intellectualism, their feeling that it's easier to look down on somebody than have your beliefs challenged. We still people see them fighting against what the truth is, but hopefully there's people waking up every day, and this has definitely been a year for people to wake up. I'm going to go ahead and bring on our co-host for the evening, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, what's up?
Good evening, Mr. Gibson. How are you?
I can't complain. And I also want to bring on Mr. Kevin Knight. Kevin.
Hey, fellas. Good to be back with you once again.
What's up, Kev?
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? Yeah.
It has been. It's been a lot's been going on since we talked last. I know the CNNs and the NBCs and the Fox News have been busy talking about Mike Pence going to a play. They've been busy, ironically, discussing the term fake news. Everything's fake news, and we have to come down on what people are seeing on the internet.
That actually, I think, is probably one of the bigger stories we need to talk about tonight. The anti-media being an alternative media outlet, which, you know, fake news isn't just an attack on fake news. It's an attack on all alternative media as a whole.
Well, that's really what this is. This isn't an attack on fake news. This is an attack on the alternative media, because when you really break it down, what they're saying is such an insult to people's intelligence that people can't distinguish what's true and what isn't. And ironically, we're dealing with the biggest entity of state-sponsored propaganda on the face of this planet. And we're not talking about, oh, well, you know, they're in collusion. They are. We saw it in WikiLeaks. They're we have talked about this at great length on this show. This is what we do here at Anti-Media. This is what we talk about, and it's coming to a head now with fake news. What the problem is they're being exposed for what they are, and they want to shut it down. And so they're going to paint a picture of one thing, because it's always, the picture's always painted a certain way so they can get whatever policy they want implemented, or they can get people, get their sympathies on a specific side of an argument. But what the base of this is to suppress the truth, unquestionably. Because what they're truly proposing is anti-First Amendment from top to bottom.
State-run media. There will be no, and that basically it's going to be any media that the state approves, that the state endorses, whatever the statement that's being made. The state will actually be, they'll be the ones, the arbiters of whether it's valid news or not. You know, you brought up WikiLeaks a moment ago, and Hillary has made a lot of claims. There are several people in the DNC have made claims about the Russians hacking it, which Julian Assange has come forth and said that's not the case. But no one, again, and I can't stress this enough, no one has questioned the validity of what was contained in those WikiLeaks. That is the truth. That is damning truth that was on John Podesta's private phone that he didn't think anybody was going to see.
Well, everybody ended up did seeing it. And the narrative, too, especially that Russia was behind all these hacks, and yet repeatedly
we have seen it debunked
over and over and over that it wasn't the Russians. But whatever, even hypothetically, if it was, which we know it wasn't, people are just overlooking the actual what was in those emails. And because of that, we know that the media is on the take with the Democratic Party. And I'm sure the same could be said for the Republican Party, but John Podesta's emails didn't offer much insight on that side of things. But I fully expect it goes the exact same way with the Republicans. Again, this isn't a partisan issue. People have to get over this whole Republican-Democrat stuff, because that is an absolute joke. That's not what this is about. This is about people and the truth and coming together and working together, no matter if you're black, white, Republican, Democrat, anything. All those labels need to fade away, and we need to work together, hand in hand, to fight what is going on and what we're seeing directly in front of us. Now, I don't physically think that a physical fight is anything to get in over this, because government and state is going to squash you like a bug if that happens. And I want to, that kind of leads us into what I want to talk about next, is what's happening in North Dakota right now. That also ties in to corporate media. They're all about talking about Mike Pence going to Hamilton or Donald Trump sending out a tweet, but they're not talking about over 300 Americans being injured by police officers, protesters injured, 300 people. And one girl by the name of Sophia Wolanski may have to have her arm amputated because of a concussion grenade that exploded right in her direct vicinity. I don't know if you've seen the pictures yet, going around social media, but it is nasty looking. You can see the injury down to the bone. She was unarmed.
It's bad, gross. Yeah.
And we're not seeing that on CNN. I wonder why. But at the same time, whenever there's people protesting Trump or something they can use for division, they're on top of that. But they're not going to cover the Dakota Access protest, because they know it would garner the sympathy of the public. They certainly can't have anything like that. So they just ignore it, no matter how nasty it gets. And then you have the police department issuing a statement with, they were originally they were saying, well, you know, they're spraying people with hoses. Of course, the police department denied it, and yet there's video after video after video after video showing what actually happened and how violent the police got with protesters. But you don't hear it in the media, and it's absolutely disgusting, and I think it's a shame that these people call themselves journalists when they're really nothing other than a PR firm.
Yep, state-sponsored, state-run. I mean, you know, there's, you know, of course, there's a lot of people that can argue, well, it's not like the media is an actual branch or arm of the government. No, but at the same time, we don't live in a republic or a democracy any longer. We live in an oligarchy. And, I think it's what, like 6 corporations own just about every single TV channel known to man on broadcast television and cable right now.
You know, and a lot of them are chiefly, it even goes beyond a step beyond that, the FCC, which ultimately controls a lot of what is decided, what goes on your airwaves. You know, this was something that the right raised early on in the Obama administration, was the chief diversity officer, Mark Lloyd, who was quoted as saying that Hugo Chavez's revolution could not take place if the government had not, in fact, controlled the media, the radio, and the print. And that was, it's been several years ago. So, you know, the government is a tool. So it doesn't matter if it's the right or the left. The government is a tool which is ultimately often seized by whatever political party is going to be enacted or going to be having power at that point. You know, Donald Trump is in office right now. Don't think for a second that power will not be wielded to control the media and the narrative, whatever it is, like Shannon, like you said, the state. Whatever the state message is going to be. So I think we're going to see a lot more than that. And it goes beyond just what corporations want to say through their means, but it goes beyond what the government will allow to be said and what the government's own narrative is going to be pushed. And I think we're seeing a lot of that actually filter down now.
And I want you both to remember that I'm saying this now. For whatever the media says about Donald Trump for the next 4 years, forever, how much they attack him, this, that, and the other, the media and the powers that be are so thankful that Donald Trump is president. He's the greatest gift they could ever have. And the reason being, he is a walking distraction. Because while we have what happened on Sunday night at Standing Rock, silence, and yet we're going to sit here and talk for 3 days about a tweet that Trump made. And he's, you know, prone to making and saying stupid stuff and sending out stuff that is inflammatory. So we're going to, for the next 4 years, be talking about some guy's Twitter account, you know, while government does whatever it wants in the background. And it's up to us, social media, not just any alternative site, but it's up to everybody to report what's going on. I think you're seeing that with, you know, live streaming and people's Twitter accounts. This is the job of everybody to report what you see, not just a specific entity. But before we get too far away, I want to quickly go over the story we've got on the front page of the antimedia.org right now. The headline is Media Silence After Dakota Access Pipeline Police Literally Blew Woman's Arm Up With a Grenade. An unprecedented militarized crackdown took place on Sunday night at the construction site of the Dakota Access Pipeline, located just outside Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, North Dakota. The important part here is approximately 300 injuries were identified, triaged, assessed, and treated by physicians, nurses, paramedics, and healers working in collaboration with the local emergency response. These 300 injuries were the direct result of excessive force by police over the course of 10 hours. At least 26 seriously injured had to be evacuated by ambulance to 3 area hospitals. Many of the injured suffered from hypothermia after law enforcement doused protesters with water cannons despite the sub-freezing temperatures. And again, that's what I was talking about earlier. There were fires that had been set, and law enforcement said that they were using the water cannons to put out the fire. But again, the video tells a completely different story. It shows it being directed right at people and attacking them with it. But also, we can't forget Miss Sophia Walensky. They actually transported her to a Minnesota hospital, and we're going to try to keep up with her injuries and hopefully she won't have to lose her arm. I haven't heard any updates with that yet, but we are looking into it. Hopefully, you know, that won't happen. An unarmed protester. But it goes on to say, in light of this overwhelmingly violent crackdown by U.S. law enforcement, one would expect the media to be up in arms with their coverage of Standing Rock. Chemical weapons / tear gas, grenades, assault weapons, and street tanks are being deployed against peaceful Americans, but the media's coverage is apathetic. And that's when it's being reported. The New York Times wrote something up about it, and the headline was 16 arrested at North Dakota pipeline protest. That was the headline the New York Times ran about what happened Sunday night.
That's 16. You know, is that why? You know, I saw the Intermedia is running a story now about a large group of veterans that are headed up to the pipeline now to apparently to protest and try to form some line of defense against what's going on now. Good story. I didn't get to catch all of it, but hopefully we see that continuing on. It's that kind of stuff that is bringing people out. Interestingly enough, that's what brought a lot of the people out at Ferguson. It brought, you know, what started out as an independent grievance among people locally turned into something much bigger when it turned out that the police were, you know, acting heavy-handed against protesters that, for whatever reason, whatever side you come down on, you've got to agree that people have the right to peaceably protest. And when the government gets involved like they are, I think it's the duty of every American and un-American and non-American to stand up and say, hey, that's not right, that's not fair. We may not agree with the cause, but you can't start throwing bombs and using violence. That's where the line is drawn. And I'm glad to know that these veterans are heading up there and hopefully we see some you know, some peaceful measures brought out of it, but who knows? Let's see what happens.
I don't remember how long ago it was, a couple weeks ago, I guess. I know that there was a group of police officers, I believe it was from Wisconsin, that were supposed to go over there, and we had a story about this up at the Anti-Media as well when it happened, but they actually had refused to go back and take part in policing these protests. So I think we are seeing, you know, some Americans realize what's going on here. The problem is, you know, there's still police there and enforcing this. And it's sad to see the level that it's been taken to. And, you know, that's the language that the government speaks is violence. That's how they know how to respond to things. And that's why I think it's so important that people not ever get violent really in any regard, but especially with government, because again, that is how the government responds to things. As soon as you get violent, now you're speaking their language and they can handle you very fast,
and there's yeah, and they control the media do. And they control yeah, the well, media and they control the narrative,
and we're and seeing the American that
government, the American government is our masters of violence and violent warfare. The rest of the world can easily agree with that statement, I'm sure.
That's not to say there aren't other countries and other you know, strong arms out there, but I would think by far the American government is by far the single probably largest entity and claimer of life so far, I think, on the planet Earth at the moment. That's kind of hard to agree with. There's more wars started by the U.S., or not just the U.S., but the Western countries out there. This stuff's got to stop. And if it's going to happen, you know, this is it kills me when people think that have a tendency to only see within the country's boundaries. As bad as this stuff is, it's just a reminder that if the American government would allow this kind of stuff to go on here, what would they allow outside of the borders and going on elsewhere around the world?
Oh, certainly. You know, I mean,
it fails in comparison.
It does, and there's a story we've got up right now as well. U.S. airstrikes in Syria attacking a cotton mill. Yeah, killed 10 civilians, which, you know, is there not a show that passes where we're talking about, you know, a handful of civilians here, a handful of civilians there that are dying in air raids by the U.S., and that's not even including what's happening in Yemen with U.S. bombs and Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, it was a family of six that was involved as well. I mean, just, you know, innocents living their life. And somehow people have bought into this theory where it's like, well, that's war. That's war. It's okay. Well, if that's war, then what are we there for to begin with? What's the war about? And I don't think anybody has a legitimate answer for that, because people say, well, Russia's doing a lot of terrible things over there. And that's, you can't deny that they are. And it's terribly tragic on both sides of the conflict. But at the same time, the United States has armed and funded the opposition to the Syrian government in a not too subtle attempt to overthrow Assad, which, you know, at this point, that looks like that's out the window. Once Russia got involved, it didn't look like that was going to happen.
Yeah, that was over. Game over.
And I even... We ran a story the other day about Syrian rebels are upset about what's going to happen to them if, you know, once Trump takes office, because, you know, who knows what Trump will do, but he's repeatedly said he's going to stop funding the Syrian rebels. And so they're concerned about, well, what's going to happen to us if we're not being funded by the United States anymore? It's like, well, you might want to find something else to do, because it probably won't last very long. And, you know, if Trump does that, I'll applaud him for that. That'll be, you know, again, we're going to have to take what he does one day at a time. I just, you know, who knows what he's going to do.
One sentence at a time, well, if you want to get down to it, yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to have to just look at his actions. And if he does that, that'll be a great thing. I certainly won't be complaining.
We won't hold our breath. He does not control the deep state. We all know that. And I think most of us probably are aware that as much good as he wishes he could do, he does not control the upper echelons, the deeper echelons of the security state. You know, I'm sure Barack Obama probably went, you know, he probably meant real well and good before he went into office. I'm one of the, you know, I think most of us probably disagree with a lot of the policies he enacted, but he probably meant well when he went into office. He probably was probably pretty anti-war, but we see how that turned out. So, yeah, keep holding your breath, America. I don't think you're going to see Donald Trump as anti-war as we want to believe.
No, I don't think it'll happen. And there's actually a story that, let's see. My biggest worry about Trump, actually a story that I had written for the anti-media. My biggest worry about Trump is he's going to end up being just like Obama. And basically, you know, I just go through and list all the stuff that Obama acted like he would never have done in a million years. And it was a million times worse than Bush had done, even though he ran completely against Bush. It talks about Barack Obama bombing the eight countries. And I know it's seven is the number that's reported, but in 2009, it was a United States drone strike in the Philippines.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's called, you know, if there was a drone strike here in the United States, that would be called bombing the United States. Even if you didn't do it every day for 8 years consistently, you still did it. Do you realize that there are 34,000 people a day that are forcibly displaced from their homes around the world, and in large part due to U.S. foreign policy right now, because of what we went in and did in Libya, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. Again, you can go down the list. This is what we're spying on everybody. We've approved arms sales over $200 billion since 2009. Again, Nobel Peace Prize winner is the greatest arms dealer on the face of the earth since World War II, and he's got a Nobel Peace Prize. We've got Chelsea Manning sitting in prison for 35 years, Nobel Peace Prize nominee, for exposing crimes committed during the Iraq War, but because of the way it happened, imprisoned. And wasn't Barack Obama, wasn't he supposed to protect whistleblowers? Wasn't that supposed to happen?
And yet, and don't think for a minute, doesn't he want to? I mean, but don't you think that ideally, if Barack Obama, the citizen, probably wants to do that?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know who, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you his rhetoric.
We can't judge, right? We can't judge his heart. I agree.
Right. And he has prosecuted more whistleblowers than all U.S. presidents combined. He has prosecuted more whistleblowers than all U.S. presidents combined.
You and his number that? Would go up one more if they had their way about Edward Snowden. You know, Kevin, you made a really good point there. And I don't know. I mean, what's worse, just being a complete and total asshole or actually feigning sympathy and feigning empathy? Which one's worse?
I think pretending to be somebody's friend when you're stabbing them in the back is worse than just somebody that's like, yeah, this is what we're doing, deal with it. Honestly, I mean, neither are good. It's not like either one are defendable, but I'd at least rather have somebody tell me in my face, this is what's about to happen. I mean, at least you can say that with somebody like John McCain or even Dick Cheney at this point. He's like, yeah, this is what we're doing, deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a really good point there. Dick Cheney has always, I mean, he's always been an asshole. Whenever he's been called out on anything, he doubles down every single time.
He does that.
He's at least been that kind of consistent, so, you know, but he is an asshole. Let's get that straight right now.
All these guys are power-hungry sociopaths, so, you know, whatever decision they make is probably not going to be in the best interest of anybody else but themselves or driven by their own personal greed and interest. I think that's probably a given, so... you know, I don't think it really matters to me if they're one bit or humanity if what, you know, is probably behind their reasoning for doing so. But I think it's more a testament that these guys are operating. They're sitting at the head of essentially a machine. You know, when you think about all these cartoons or these movies, that we've seen it growing up or throughout the years of the giant robot that's ultimately being controlled by a little man who's sitting at the nucleus at the heart of it pulling the joysticks. You know, it really is almost like that, in my opinion, that, you know, whatever the person at the helm, they're completely surrounded by the machinery that composes the machine. So whatever, you know, whatever good heart that these people probably have, whatever ideology, you know, if you'd ask the right coming into office, Barack Obama was prepared to take over the country and employ or put together some socialist utopia, and you know that may
hope
be something
and change. Hope and change. I remember it well, man. That was awesome.
Right. Yeah, and see that, and I firmly believe that may have been something that he wanted to do when he was younger. I mean, when people are younger and wild and ideologically pure or hardcore about things, you know, you have what you believe when you're younger. But no matter what your ideas are that you really want to profess and push forward, I just don't see them. When you get into the helm of the United States government, all that stuff goes out the window. And I think we've got to remember that this is the machine that we are faced with. So when Barack Obama does this or he does that and he sets these records, I would be willing to bet that we'll see Donald Trump deport more non-citizens. I think we'll see Donald Trump imprison more people for non-felony drug convictions, for more victimless crimes. It's only going to be a continuation, and if it wouldn't be Donald Trump, it would be the next face in office, guaranteed.
But people overlook the fact that Obama has deported almost 3 million people, and nobody's talking about that. He has deported more people than any president in history.
I'd be willing to bet that Bush probably did more so than his predecessor as well. Probably, I think, probably up except for Eisenhower, who, of course, under Operation Wetback, deported, I forget how many millions of people forcibly, but that was back in the 1950s. But again, I think that's all a symptom of the government of each growing state. I mean, the resources are – it takes so many resources, and that's why – you know, Trump himself has talked about what it costs millions of dollars to deport all these people. back to Mexico, and how many billions of dollars ultimately to deport the people that he says he's going to send back, even if he sends back just the supposed lawbreakers and the criminals? Do you think the U.S. government has the power to even do that?
What does that mean? I really don't think that they do unless they actually involve the local law enforcement, local and county and state law enforcement.
Do you know what that looks like?
Yeah. I know exactly what that looks like, and there's several police municipalities. We live in a city, Mr. Gibson and myself do, that pretty much is on record for saying that is not our problem. We're not in the business of doing the federal government's business, and we're going to leave the issue to immigration to them. We are an open and accepting city, and we leave it at that. There's so many things that we can do on an individual level, but getting your state and local governments involved with pulling away from federal government funding and things like that, and being truly self-sustaining. You have communities like that dot around America. A lot of those are in red states. Be that as it may, it's still very, very important that we try to do whatever we can to pull ourselves away from the federal government as far as any kind of, why did we need to bomb 8 countries? I think Mr. Gibson asked the correct question there. And that's a question that nobody thinks to ask. They just, that's just war. Well, why are we at war? Why are we bombing these people? And when we say the word bomb, I think it undersells the fact that it's truly murder at the end of the day. When you bomb somebody, you kill them. And in some cases, in a lot of cases, like with what Mr. Gibson said about Syria a moment ago, 10 people died. And we say that kind of so casually. 10 people died today, or 10 people were killed in an airstrike, or this, that, and the other. 10 individual people. Imagine 10 people in your life suddenly gone from a bomb from a foreign nation who your nation is not attacked. This is what breeds terrorism.
Every day. Wouldn't you wish death upon the people that murdered your family?
Absolutely.
And what about your own government that, that knowingly allowed and colluded with the foreign government? Wouldn't you be as equally as upset and enraged at that group?
But that's the thing, it's just the cycle continues and we never get anywhere. And nothing ever changes is because it's this cycle of violence. It's a cycle of division. We see it on the streets of America every single day. Look, we have seen 1,000 people in 2014, 15, and 16 killed by police officers in the streets. Does that mean that all 1,000 of those people were innocent victims? No, it does not. But does that mean that all 1,000 people should have been put to death right then and there, no charge, no trial? That's not good. That's not a free country. There are circumstances, and people say, well, that's just part of doing the job. But when you see so many situations that we have seen in this country, and you don't get the justice when some of these killings take place, that's a huge, 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 huge problem. And does it go back to race? In some cases, it absolutely does. But again, I think if you focus on the actual, skin color of somebody, you're still just spinning in circles. This has to stop. It doesn't matter what color the skin was of the person that shot. It doesn't matter the skin color the person that was shot. If a human being was shot, we need to find out why. And if they didn't do anything, the person that did it needs to be tried for killing somebody, no matter what their job was. We have to realize that we're all people. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and hit another story real quick. I knew I wanted to talk about this, so we're going to talk about it. I'll start off. We've got a story up right now on the antimedia.org. It's about a story in Norway. It's pedophile ring involving politicians. There was actually 51 people that were arrested. It was called Operation Dark Room. We have definitely seen in recent years cases of pedophilia, child trafficking going on around the world. We've seen it cases of the Catholic Church. We've seen it in the UK. We've seen it with BBC, Jimmy Savile. I don't know how familiar people are with this whole Pizzagate thing. The
Pizzagate.
Okay, Kevin, I'm going to bring you in on this. Because what was it, like, the day that it dropped, like, this information started coming out, like, at all? Or the day after,
we had, followed it. I remember you telling me about it. I couldn't believe it.
And we had a whole show where we discussed this. How long ago was that?
It's been a few weeks.
It was
before the election.
It was 4 days before the election because we were wondering if it was going to be enough time and if, in fact, it was what Julian Assange kept alluding to and he kept saying. This would be the one that brought Hillary Clinton to prison. It was about that. It was during that same email bomb drop that this also came out. So yeah, it was Spirit it was Dinner.
Spirit Cook
came out right before, like a day before.
But yeah, there ended up being odd pictures and bizarre language that you know
the pizza map. Yeah,
that could be.
Oh, by the way, did you happen to see that the logos?
Yes.
Supposedly the logo was changed right shortly thereafter, like here in the last like 2-3 weeks after this stuff dropped.
It wasn't at the main pizza place they're discussing. It was actually at another pizza place on the same street called Besto Pizza. But the New York Times ran a story about this just yesterday, I believe, surprisingly. But, of course, it was in the context of this is literally the most insane story of all time. This is how crazy
fake
people
news. Have been. Fake news.
The term fake news was used throughout the article, and that was pretty much the premise of the story, was pushing the whole fake news narrative that they're harming, you know, that news can, that's harming innocent people's lives. And that, of course, can happen. Yet, the story didn't address any of the actual facts of what has come out tonight on Reddit. There were a few subreddits discussing the investigation, which has been carried out by quite a few people online. It was all deleted. Every single bit of it was deleted off of Reddit tonight, which is, you know, take that for what you will. But it seems like the past couple of days, especially with the New York Times story, now they're trying to delete everything that they can on the internet about it. You know, what's the end goal? They don't do... Think about how many crazy things are said on the internet. There's some nut stuff said on the internet, right? They don't go around deleting it. It just sits there. And there's never any specific... People don't go out of their way to delete it. They don't go out of their way to write stories in the New York Times about it. We talked about it that night that it first broke, Kevin, and... you know, the more has gone on with this, there's something more to it than we're being told. I'll say that. I can't tell you entirely, but I do believe there's enough evidence that it should be investigated, unquestionably.
Well, I mean, you know, even if it isn't pedophilia, what else could it be?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. I do think...
There's an underground international gambling ring, obviously.
Oh, right. Come on, man. as you know, as many legal places as there are to gamble, legitimate places in the United States. You don't have to travel far from Washington.
Don't blow the
head to Atlantic City and get your game on.
And come here's on, the thing. Here's the thing with stuff like this, and I think we're seeing it with this. I think there's a lot of the stuff that people are saying surrounding this that people are going out on a limb to connect dots that aren't there. I think, you know, that's the way the human brain works. And they're saying, well, this means this, this means this, this means this. And that doesn't prove a whole lot. And I think that's the stuff people need to be careful of. But that's not entirely what all this is. We're talking, it gets pretty deep. Real quick, if y'all want to just kind of give me your thoughts of the whole thing, and I'm going to read something for everybody because it'll do better justice than I can do just kind of running my mouth about it.
Go ahead.
Let's see. I'm waiting. Let me see if I can find it here. It luckily, and I'll say this for all this stuff that got pulled off of Reddit has been archived, and it all still exists in one way, shape, or form on the internet. But
if that doesn't raise more alarms, you know, I mean, come on, you're going to silence the messenger? You just give credibility and
it does to
whatever the message is.
It does, but okay. Take it for what you will, but I want to read this. This was actually posted on Reddit by a journalist. It's very, very well written, very well sourced, that says that their editor would never in a million years have let them publish it. So they published it on Reddit, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it. And take it for what you will. You know, I'm not telling anybody what to believe on this stuff, but anyway. We are told the work on Pizzagate and other message boards is illegitimate because people are rushing to conclusions or because they are being paranoid or partisan, despite the fact that so many of the people have different political complexions provably working together. The subtitle here, is, of course, is that the state is solely legitimate to suspect and investigate crimes. But what if the state itself is in a systematic way responsible for said crimes? It would not be a first, after all. Democide, death by government, a word surprisingly absent from conversations, was the first cause of non-natural deaths in the 20th century. Whether one is from the right, left, or center, one cannot deny government is the number one abuser, enslaver, and serial killer in history. We may honestly disagree on the ways to eradicate the phenomenon, or we may regret the fact, but we can definitely not deny it. So if the state itself is committing crimes, it is the people's sovereign and sacred duty to expose it. Those who understand this best tend to become journalists. At least that's what drove me, the writer of this, to the profession. Now, specifically on this work, first, there's context. Institutional child abuse is already is a common knowledge phenomenon. From Presidio affair to Jimmy Savile and the BBC, or from the Vatican's historic involvement in covering up pedophilia to U.S. legislators' documented trips on the Lolita Express, the scourge has been featured in news, movies, documentaries, artwork. There have also been many policymakers, prosecutors, investigators, and victims denouncing this very phenomenon. See, for example, British Member of Parliament John Mann gave a passionate speech before Parliament on the subject just last year, or the extensive report by former undercover Interpol agent Bannon, indeed, the only possible disagreement can be on the scale and how systematic the phenomenon is. To honestly decide whether that's what we are seeing in the Podesta emails, please have a look at this one example. Look at the invitation at the end of the thread. Miss Lizzuto is inviting people, let's see if I can find it here, among which are John and Mary Podesta, to a farm in Lovettsville. This is what she says. We plan to heat the pool, so a swim is a possibility. Bonnie will be Uber service to transport Ruby, Emerson, and Maeve Luzzatto, 11, 9, and almost 7. So you'll have some further entertainment, and they will be in that pool for sure. Impossible, you say. Okay, so that was the end of that email. Impossible, you say. They couldn't possibly be speaking about abusing of children. After all, what step-grandmother, and I agree with this, you know, who would do this? After all, what stepmother would offer three innocent children up for group abuse? I mean, that sounds deranged. And that, you know, where you get into the whole, this is crazy. There's no way this is true. This is how invitee Drew Littman answers the invitation. I've never had an affair, so I passed the Walter Jones test. If you're not aware, Walter Jones has for 20 years been the U.S. representative for North Carolina's 3rd Congressional District in D.C. He's regarded as the absolute caricature of a do-gooder, i.e. he's a noble man indeed. Agreed, if that example was the only one, one could dismiss it as a misrepresentation and a misinterpretation. But there's much, much, much more. Getting to the whole code words, handkerchiefs, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to go down a little bit from this because I think, you know, you get into the whole, I think the whole emails and the code words, you know, I don't know what I feel about that. But this is where it gets a little iffy here. The James Alphantis, I know I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of his last name, but he was listed as the 49th most influential person in D.C. by GQ magazine. He is a chef and a White House regular, and he is the boyfriend of David Brock, owner of Comet Ping Pong Pizza, which is the, you know, the pizza place everybody's talking about with this thing. He had an Instagram account filled with references to and depiction of child abuse and torture. It's all been set to private now, but again, people on the internet, they archive everything. It is also not just the frescoes in his restaurant or even the artists he hosts there. It's not even the fact his menu and the logos of three other iconic businesses next door feature FBI-recognized pedophilia symbols. This is about his own posts, pictures, comments, and friends on social media. Again, you'll have to look it up for yourself, but it is hardly ambiguous. I haven't gone too deep into the pictures because I don't think I can do it. But I've seen a few, and no sane human being is doing this. I'll say that, or posting pictures of some of the stuff, especially if you're talking about your place of business, and especially a family pizza place. It is definitely not family oriented, these pictures. If that surprises you, did you know that Aaron Rayo was caught liking several of the creepiest toddler Instagram posts? Again, that could be dismissed. Only there's all this in context and the fact that Mr. Rayo is an assistant U.S. attorney and charged with prosecuting child pornography and abuse. Also, did you know that Laura Silsby, which we talked about that night, Kevin, Laura Silsby, the woman caught trying to smuggle 33 children out of Haiti, which Haiti and the Clintons, we all know about that, whose release from jail became a personal matter for Mrs. Clinton, thereafter became an associate of My State USA, which changed its name to AlertSense, and which is the one providing the technology to issue Amber Alerts.
She was picked up also from the airport or something from when she was released from jail or released for whatever sentence she had. I can't remember who it was, but she was picked up from somebody that I think had direct ties to like Jeffrey Epstein or somebody that would make you that just further insinuated that there seemed to be more there than would meet the eye. And I can't remember who it was, but maybe we'll find out who it was and dig on that. But yeah, creepy stuff, man. That is
Ugh.
Gross. Yeah. And, let's see. And there was one other point that I wanted to make here, and I can't even find it. I'm not going to read this entire thing. But, you know, it's just mind-blowing. And what's really scary is the fact that we have such distrust in the people that are supposedly representing us, that this even at some point becomes something this insane is even a possibility. You know, I can say a lot of things for a lot of people, but there's, you know, connections with this stuff. There's one thing in particular, and it's not just Epstein, who they, of course, pal around with, which we all know about, but there's a few others that they have no problems, you know, being friends with, associating with in these circles. That's the disturbing thing, is I believe if it is happening, it's being done to blackmail people. I don't know. I mean, the whole topic just genuinely makes me sick, and it's so crazy that I don't want to believe it. But I don't know. What's your take on it, Shannon? Where do you think it stands? Do you think it's just absolute bonkersville?
Well, when it first came out, I actually, you know, and after we did the show, I was kind of late to the game. I'd only seen just a few small, you know, short little quips on it. So I went down the rabbit hole, and I actually spent that whole entire weekend investigating for myself through the Reddit threads, 4chan, going to every single website, some that were completely non-related, older articles, one article, for instance, with John Podesta sharing his world-famous pizza recipe and, you know, discussing his little pizza oven outside and so on and so forth. And it seemed pretty innocent enough. And at first I was like, no, there's, you know, I think people are reaching with this. You know, the guy's apparently known for his pizza in Washington. And then I started reading the emails and I read more emails and dug pretty deep into the WikiLeaks. I saw a bunch of other stuff that I don't think has even come to light, that may or may not come to light. Who knows? Because there's a huge treasure trove of information in those leaks. What's a pizza map?
You know? And that's the thing. It's unexplainable, and you can't say. And I want to go ahead and throw this out there, and just so everybody knows, you have to be careful. You can't just, you know, go on a thread or a blog and start believing this stuff. I will say that what I just read, you know, everything was extremely well sourced. It's important that you go back and know that you can confirm. I think, especially with memes, people just say things like, oh, I read this thing or I saw this video. You have to know a lot of the stuff is true. And in this case, there are a lot of connections that are 100% true.
Don't forget one thing. I think this may have been what you were going to hit on, but the Washington Post apparently had a story that was removed, which detailed some photographs of naked boys in the artwork hanging up at Podesta's home.
Yeah, that's definitely part of this. And here's one. How about the fact that John and Tony Podesta are old friends with Jeffrey Epstein, Dennis Hastert, and Clement Fraud, three convicted child molesters? Who has so many child rapists as friends, and who stays friends with child rapists after they've been exposed and convicted? I think that's one thing that to me is where it starts kind of crossing into maybe there's something to this, because why are you still hanging out with these people?
Well, there is that. You are the company you keep, I guess you could say. But I mean, again, it's not everything we've talked about, though, still seems like, you know, to the uninitiated, just a stream of random occurrences that unfortunately for some reason or another, some nefarious person has, you know, started something on the internet and the internet has taken hold of it. And you really need to go and do the investigation for yourself and read for yourself, because it just gets, the more you read it, it gets weirder and weirder and harder to explain, at least in a rational, oh, okay, well, it could be this, or, oh, well, you know, rationally, it could be this. And then it start. Then it gets off into an avenue. It's like, wait a minute, what was that? What did I just read? And, you know, whether it's, you know, again, whether it's something other than pedophilia, you know, whether it be, I don't know, dealing in illegal arms or something like that, I have no idea. But given my own evidence of what I've seen and the, you know, I guess a catching up I've had to do with all these logos and slang and terms and symbols, which is pretty weird in and of itself.
Right. I mean, is it all just one huge coincidence? I don't know.
I mean, it's one hell of a coincidence the more and more you look into it.
And it would be completely irresponsible of me to sit here and tell people, well, this is all 100% true. You better believe this is happening. But at the same time, I think it's irresponsible to just completely dismiss the fact there's a lot of coincidences here. And I think people should look into this and, you know, for themselves and make up their own minds, if you're so willing, because, you know, this isn't a
topic. Well, you know, as much as people scream about saving children, you know, if there is absolutely nothing to this, then so be it. But it at least needs to be given a very thorough examination, and for no other reason other than it may possibly save one child. Okay, sure. Let's throw it off like that. We'll go on and get on everybody's field so everybody can get excited about it, and it can be on Oprah just like everything else that matters, quote unquote.
And that's the truth, because if there's a 5% chance this is real, think about, like, what's going on? Like, and the people that have been affected by this. I don't know. It's definitely a wild, wild accusation. I'll say that.
It just doesn't make sense that they would start taking it off of websites if it was not true, or, you know, there would just be a bunch of disclaimers. No, so-and-so came out and they completely debunked it, and story's over, show's over, folks, nothing to see here, move along.
That's what I think. I think if I'll say this, if it was me and I owned this pizza place, I would be standing on the roof of that pizza place being like, no, none of this is true. Everybody can come on and walk on through and do whatever they need to do, because I'm going to tell you that this is not true. And I wouldn't be, you know, my first thought wouldn't be delete it so nobody sees it. My first thought would be to go ahead and let everybody know the truth, and have it very well documented of what, you know, that would be. And that would be that there would be nothing nefarious going on. But, you know,
in the story you referenced earlier,
I'm not the 49th most powerful, influential person in Washington, D.C. ever. So,
yeah.
So,
well, the guy that owns the pizza place, I mean, to go ahead and make this fair and balanced, has come out and come on record and said nothing like that's going on here. Nothing to see here. They did the little fake news piece and included a quick little interview with him and, you know, a dismissive wave of the hand. And that may very well be the case. There's probably some things in these leaks that may appear to be connected that have absolutely nothing to do with anything.
Oh, 100% believe that.
And this guy may have accidentally got swept up in it, but there's still a story there. And I think it needs to be investigated.
I agree. I 100% believe that. I don't think everything that's the connection is a connection like they think. I think it's people just, their minds are going, you know, far off somewhere. But that's it for us tonight, Anti-Media Radio. For Kevin, for Shannon, I am SM Gibson Radio. Nick will be here tomorrow night on Thursday, same Anti-Media Radio time. Out. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.